This is Jack Gibson from Exodus, and you're listening to Music City Metal.
Hey, this is Rob Baird from Cannibal Corpse, and you're listening to Larry and Mary Fish on Music City Metal. Crank it up!
Music City Metal, we're back in the Electric Fish Bowl. It has been a minute, Mary Fish.
It's been about 5 minutes. Yeah.
I have a good excuse. We'll talk about it later.
You have an excuse.
But nonetheless, here we are. It's good to blow the dust off the microphones and get things going because...
Literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mountain Tomb is with us. And let me tell you, Matt O'Neill and the boys, Matt and I met at Fish Fest. Welcome, by the way. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
But interestingly enough, you and I met at our last Fish Fest, which we're going to talk about for a minute tonight. You can tell when you meet someone you're tuned into wavelength-wise, you know, with just having a good heart, loving metal, loving who we are, loving the lifestyle, wanting to give and all that. So it was we had a lot of similarities and connected. And happy to do this podcast tonight with the whole band. Let's talk about what you guys have been up to, what's about to happen, and get to know y'all a little bit. I'm going to leave a lot of that up to my better half, too. Much better interviewer than I am. I can set the tone.
Miss Mary.
What's up with you guys, man? Let's go through and say, since we are doing just audio here, we'll throw a picture up here. Grab a screenshot, Mary. When everyone's making a bad face. But go ahead, introduce y'all. Yeah, go ahead,
man. Yeah, I'm excited to announce Jason and Lee. Jason is our bass player. Jason and I used to be in a band years ago together. I'm excited to be working with him again. And then we also have Lee, our lead drummer. So Mountain Team is a full circle now, and we are working, writing, and rehearsing, and hopefully be getting out playing soon. That's our goal. That's what we really want to do, but there's a lot of hard work ahead of us. So, but I'm gonna let these guys tell you their background. Let Jason go first.
No, as Matt kind of said earlier, we met a long time ago, and we were talking when he was having all the issues with his Android, back in even before Shape Cell. I mean, we knew each other, right? I mean, we were always playing the distinct.
Oh, my God, you got that picture, dude.
It's on my bookcase, baby. It's here.
That's the shit, dude.
Look at the dude with the mohawk
in the middle. Yeah, the twin brothers. Oh, my God, dude, I ain't seen that picture in forever, yo.
Yeah. Wow. It's been sitting here
for years.
Wow, man.
Gosh, I would say 15 years ago. Hang on, I'm trying to turn the camera back around. Yeah. Would you think 15 years ago?
Yeah, about 15.
No, it's longer than that, dude, because my daughter's 17 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Holy
yeah, God. It's about 28. It's about 20.
It's probably been like 20 years ago.
Let me point out that if you can't remember how long it you're definitely showing you're in the second half. What was it, 15? No, it was 20 years ago.
I mean, I'm 20 years older.
You weren't three when you were there.
I mean, yeah. Being here in Knoxville, we always played with a lot of the same groups and the same guys. So, I mean, me and Matt knew each other years before we ever even played together. And it just kind of happened where I ended up leaving a band and they ended up having a spot kind of together. It was never really planned out, or anything like that. But I guess let's fast forward 20 years now to modern time, like February of this year. I haven't talked to Matt in years. I mean, years, just years. And he happened to be in Knoxville watching one of the brothers in the picture play. Their band was over here from Virginia. They were playing in downtown Knoxville. And I was working. I'm with Freedom Boat Club, and I was doing an event in downtown Knoxville. at some gala event or something, and I'm sitting outside this big building in a boat, and I'm looking like across the street. Well, I start getting messages and stuff like that. Dude, the band was playing right across the street from where I'm parked. Like, I can see the venue where they are at from exactly where I'm sitting. Now, again, we haven't talked to each other in years, haven't seen each other in 15 years. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, three of us end up within 100 yards of each other 2 decades later, just on a whim. So, you know, kind of like you said, when things happen and you just meet people and stuff kind of just slams you back together. I mean, the universe has a way of saying you guys aren't fucking done yet, yeah, you know? So man, I think that's really what happened.
That's bad.
Yeah. So that, to expand on that, when I first started Mountain Tune, and even Dylan could probably verify this, when I was working on Mountain Tune and Dylan got in the band, I had mentioned Jason several times. It's like, man, I'm trying to find this cat Jason I work with, man. He's a beautiful soul. I wish I could find him. I wish I could work with him again. And then lo and behold, that evening I went to Knoxville and it was just like this, all these people we used to jam with and all these people we used to get shows with. It was just this great big, you know, what would you call that when everybody gets back together?
A reunion.
A reunion, you know? And then lo and behold, out of nowhere, my old guitar player, he's like, dude, I am literally texting Jason Evans right now, and he's on his way over. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I've been trying to find him for years. He's like, no, he's on his way over here. He walked in the door. We hugged each other, and we sat down, and we just started talking. And it was just like I explained to him about what Mountain Tune is and what we're doing. And he was like, I'll get a bass tomorrow. And I was like, oh, my God, are you kidding? I got sick. I was like, this is the cat I've been wanting to work with, you know. And then I remember the next day, like, I called Bill, and I was like, dude, the most mind-blowing experience happened. And Dylan was like, so we got Jason. I was like, yeah, we got Jason. He was like, okay, we're good. We're good. I was like, yeah, we're good, man. You know, so it was very exciting having Jason come back. So.
One big happy family. Yay. Where's the crowd noise? Do you have the crowd button?
No, I had some funny noises, but.
There it is. Yay. Cool. Anyway. Well, they might not be able to hear that. I think we can only hear it in our headphones.
Yeah, you guys don't. I just did a little crack noise background. I don't know if they'll. No, they should hear it. If they're hearing,
I apologize. If you guys hear dogs barking or anything.
No, it's all good. It makes it real. Everything's changed now. You watch a major news network, and I saw kids somersaulting behind a woman doing weather. I mean. You know, when you see that, who gives a fuck if a dog's barking on a podcast? You know, because I don't know. I just, when I saw that, I'm like, wow, the world has permanently changed. This was lady doing a weather report with kids wrestling behind her. And not a damn thing she could do about it.
You're talking about weather reports. It was fantastic. I was watching the Weather Channel, and I guess this has been, it's been a year ago probably, and I remember the dude who always does the hurricanes, like Jim Cantore, whatever the hell his name is, he's like on the Weather Channel, and you see him, he's doing the hurricane thing, and he's standing there, and he's like, you can see the wind.
Oh, yeah.
These two kids, no. These two kids, they're like 12 years old. They come walking across the camera in the back. They're just strolling. They're not blowing or anything. They're just looking at him like he's an idiot going. you talking about the weather report, just the fake cameras, dude. I couldn't. I busted my
head. I've seen that, actually. You got busted. Yeah. Big fan off camera. Jeez. But yeah, anyway, so it's all changed. But yeah, you know, well, this is the way we do this now. It's real. It's at home, and dog barking's cool. I don't mind. Cool. I really like that story, though. What did you guys do those 20 years? What kind of music was it when you played together before?
It was, man.
Anything like?
We were a lot faster, a lot chunkier. We weren't as rhythmic and pretty as what we're trying to be now. We were just a bunch of young kids that were smoking dope, drinking beer, just trying to be as loud and as fast as we could be. But we had some melodic stuff to us. We were definitely one of the metal bands to be, I don't want to say reckoned with, but we were definitely a band you wanted to play. If you wanted to show, if you wanted people to show up and party and have a good time, we were definitely a band to play with. I'm not trying to name drop, but we did play with 10 Years. We played with Brent from Shinedown. There was a lot of cool music that came out of that time. And there was a lot of partying. There was a lot of fun. And seriously, the band that you want to play with, if you really want to have a good time and throw down some good metal, you're the band to play with, because we had our shit together and we wrote some good stuff and we were a lot faster. It was almost kind of like a, well, how would you explain it, Jay? It was almost kind of like a Mudvayne kind of meant kind of Slayer in a kind of way, because we were melodic and really fast at the same time.
I mean, as far as like genre, I mean, we had a lot of that tribal influence too. There was a lot of Soulfly, a lot of Sepultura, you know, and stuff like that floating in there. But I think the reason why everybody really liked playing with us and, you know, us doing shows is, I mean, at the end of the day, to now, even look beyond me and you, I mean, you look at Lee, you look at Dylan, I mean, man, we're all good fucking people. You know, and I mean, that's what I think everybody kind of gravitates towards. It was like, you know, I think people can tell we're genuine. People can tell we're sincere. People can tell we love what we're doing. And we're not trying to work an angle. We're just being exactly what we are, you know? And I mean, I think that shines through, and I think it always has shined through. And the same thing, I mean, like when I met Dylan and when I met Lee and we all got together and we're all hanging out, I mean, you left, you're gone. I mean, hell, the three of us are sitting in there just like playing around like kids sharing Legos in daycare, you know? And I mean, most of the time, dudes can't do that. I mean, you got to think we've got that appendage issue where we all feel like we have to be bigger, better, and badder than like the next person. And I guess, man, we all kind of checked our egos at the door, you know? I mean, it was, we all just kind of came in, we sat down, we got along, we immediately just kind of clicked, kind of hit it, started fucking with each other like we had known each other for years. So I still think, even though we may be different fellas, everybody still knows that you're still good guys. You still get that same vibe, you know, from the group. Yeah, and
that was one of the reasons why, you know, when I met Dylan and he started playing in the band, the first thing I gravitated to, he's just a good dude. But then I heard him play and I was like, wow, I can learn from this cat. And I'm much older than him, and I can learn from him. And that was the point of Mountain Tim, was like, I want to be better than what I was when we were 20, right? Because if I'm going to do this, then I really got to work hard. So I met this cat, and he's teaching me stuff. And then I was like, you know, in the background, I was like, man, if I could just get with Jason. I mean, if I could just get with Jason. This guy's a bass player. He's a lyricist. And you and I got to a point where we were able to just trade back and forth on vocals so easily, you know. And then you fell in the band, and it was like, okay, now we need a drummer. And then it was just like, it just kind of, everything just kind of happened the way it was supposed to. Everything just, and then Lee shows up, and he's like, well, I'm a barber. I live like 2 minutes down the road. I cut y'all's hair for free, and I do this. And it was like, and then, like you said, we all showed up, and there's no egos with us. It's like, everybody's like, okay, you're good at this. You're good. Everybody's complimenting each other. Like, you're good at this, but you suck at that, so let's work on that together. And it's not an insult to say you suck at that. It's like, this is where you need to improve. You know what I mean? And it's not a slight or an insult to anybody's personality. It's like, as a collective, as a whole, it's like, I know your weakness. I'm here to lift you up. And that's what was so freaking cool about Mountain Tim. The very first day we met, I was just like, and the reason I disappeared, because I had to go outside and cry and go, dude, is this really happening? Like, I have got the dudes I want to work with. Like, this is it, you know?
You're always learning, too. And that's what's nice about music.
Yes.
That's it. Not my little 2 cents.
I was waiting. There was a pause. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah. You're always learning. You suck, work on that.
No, that's awesome. That's actually a really good segue into, I noticed whoever wrote the your website, whoever designed your website and did the writing for that, mentioned genre bending a couple of times. And then I did hear something about this canoe metal through the grapevine. So I did my homework. Yeah. Let's talk about, who wants to talk about that for a sec?
You got this. That's all you. That's your trademark, baby.
Well,
that's all you do.
We were all talking about, you know, just like the different genres and stuff and what influences you and where we came from. And I guess, you know, for me, you know, being in my mid-40s and Matt being in his mid-40s, you know, probably the biggest genre we went through was nu metal. You know, I mean, when, you know, the nu metal came out, I mean, we were all probably in high school when that all really started. I mean, you started seeing the bands like, you know, Korn and Tool and Limp Bizkit, you know, and all these groups coming out that kind of just broke a mold and really started their own thing. Well, when we were doing the podcast, we were just kind of talking about how we've really taken a lot from our past, but we're also looking at what's kind of here and now, and we're kind of trying to figure out a way to bring a lot of this stuff together, but yet do it in our own style, not necessarily trying to follow anybody's coattails or, you know, jump on any kind of a bandwagon and just saying, let's do it. And somebody made the joke about the new metal, and it was like, well, yeah, it still is new metal. It's just, this is different. We're going to spell it K-N-U instead of N-U. So we are new metal. And it was like, we're going to take the K and we're going to flip it backwards, you know, like Korn did with the R. Right. So we've got new metal. So then it kind of spiraled into a joke from there, pronounced canoe, like the boat and the oar and stuff like that. You know, we kind of started having a little fun with it, but it's just, we're trying to take what we know and what we love and actually make it extremely relatable to kind of what's going on today, you know, because, and Matt can spin it a lot more beautifully than I can when it comes to this. But I mean, just when you see all the problems that are going on in the world, and every time we're turning on the television, this is happening, that's happening, the other's happening, and it's being blamed on everything from religion to race and all this. And I mean, we want to try to touch onto a little bit of all this because we think that there's a lot of people out there that probably feel the same way we do about a lot of subjects. So I'll let that back.
Yeah,
with mountains, our biggest message is love. We are love? All human beings. We all make mistakes. Love. That's Mountain Tune's message. Love.
That's it.
We're all human beings. We all make mistakes, and we're not better than anybody else. We're not. So Mountain Tune's goal is just to spread fun and love. And it's, you know, having Dylan and Jason and Lee, and then our producer Chris, who couldn't be here tonight. That's the thing. When we get together, we're very serious about what we do, but we don't take ourselves so seriously that we can't have a good time. And we make the most ridiculous, stupid jokes, and we make fun of ourselves 24/7. Because if you can't make fun of yourself, I mean, what's the point?
Exactly.
If very you get important. To a point where you, it's very important to humble yourself. And that was one thing. Like Jason and I, we worked together, you know, years ago together, and I always knew when I did this project, I want him back in the band because he's somebody he's always been my voice of reason for one, and then two, he's somebody I can just sit around and just bullshit with. And he'll tell me the honest truth, and it keeps you humble. And then Dylan's the same way. Dylan, I'll sit and have serious conversations about where we want to take this business, not band. We are a band, but it's a business. And he can kind of level me out as well. And he'll be like, well, are you not listening to Jason? Well, Jason's like, blah, blah, blah. And Lee's new to all this. So he's kind of, you know, he's treading on water. He's figuring it out. And it's just a beautiful thing to know that I've got a group of guys that I can set with and be very serious with, but then turn right around and go, you know what? We're having fun and we're just making fun of each other and we're all very humble. We're nobody special, but we take what we do very serious together and we analyze every little lyric and beat and this, that, or whatever. But once it gets out to the world, us behind the scenes, we're actually making fun of ourselves going, did you see what, I wish I could change this. I wish you could change that or whatever. So it's a very humbling experience, and being a musician with these guys, it's absolutely an absolute blessing in my life. I mean, it's I'm a very lucky dude. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we all are. I mean, when you sit back, like, I mean, Dylan, you got to think, I was so excited the other day. We started putting the verses and the choruses together for the new song that's going to come out. And I mean, Dylan chimed right in and was like, dude, that chorus is awesome. And I'm not going to say everything he said, but he was like, dude, that's really sick. And then I was like, man, check this out. Here's the verse and here's the chorus. The next text back from Dylan is, that sounds like doo-doo. You know? He's like, you know? He's like, okay. Okay. You know, so you're 100% when just we can kind of keep each other in check. Nobody's getting their feelings hurt. You know, we're all grown. We're all adults. We can agree to disagree. And if we don't all agree, we're not doing it. You know, if we all agree, we're doing it. You know, so I think that's a good way of working things for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important for us to analyze and look at what we're doing to make the best product possible to put it out there because – you know, if one of us underperforms, the next guy's not going to perform it. So why put it out there, you know? And like Dylan, there's been times I've been in the studio doing vocals, and I have literally seen Dylan and Chris leave the studio just shaking their heads going, what the hell is wrong with O'Neill tonight? You know, and they'll get my ass about it. And there's nothing wrong with that because it's not a, this guy sucks. It's, I know he can do better. What's going on tonight? What's in his brain? What's affecting him mentally? What's affecting him physically? So as a family in a band, being able to check each other like that and not take it personal because all your brothers are lifting you up is very important. And I've, again, working with Dylan, he does that. Jason, I worked with him before for a long time. I know he does that. Lee's, you know, like I said, he's getting used to being able to get in there and be like, okay, that was cool. That sucked. I didn't like this, that, or whatever. And then he goes, oh, did I say the wrong thing? It's like, no, man, you're good. You're good. You know, just do your thing. You know? So it's a growing learning process. And to have these guys in this band that nobody has a fucking ego that you have to deal with, it's really a fucking blessing, you know, because we're able to sit down and work really hard together. And at the end of the day, go, here, world, this is what we did together. Hope you like it.
So it's
Josh, you'll go down foundation with your Lexi, Android tablet there. Grab your little pen, Matt, and jot down, my brothers will lift me up. That's a good line. There you go. That's a good line.
That's a good one. Write that one. It's an excellent foundation that you guys have, the early connection, doing some shows together. You knew you were tuned in. You did some cool shit. And there you are. We all grow up 20 years later. And it sounds like you have a great foundation. I think it's time we play a tune. I know what we're going to play. And, man, that video is so cool looking, man. What a gorgeous piece of cinematography.
Oh, yeah. I wonder where they shot that video for God Has a Gun. Just wondering.
Dylan, do you know where we shot this video at, Dylan?
It was a so beautiful good plot of land. It's beautiful plot of land.
We love it here, man. We do. We love it here, and we love sharing it. I am the only – we haven't done anything yet this year. I'm really bumming, but we will before summer's out. But we love just doing what you guys did. That's the second video that's been shot here. We love having parties. We did a little one-on-one mentorship with a couple hurting people in the last year. Stayed here for a few days helping them out. Again, going through a mental health thing, which we're going to talk about. We're going to get into some specifics after we play the song about your lyric writing. And, you know, you mentioned love, which is a great thing. And that's – love is there to put your arm around the people that are suffering, whether it's a cold virus, whether it's COVID, or a mental virus. is sometimes we like – and that's the basis of helping those people. And I want to get into lyric writing and ideas. This one can touch a nerve with some people. It's very, very graphic, but you want to go ahead and explain it before we play such a great groove with some gorgeous chorus vocals in there, crunches, heavy bass, nice and loud bass in there.
We love this song.
Yeah, God Has a Gun came about because as a kid growing up in the South, metal's always been looked at this thing as like, you know, it's satanic, it's this, it's that, or whatever. It's, you know, it's extreme, it's the outside, it's not accepted or whatever. So I had an opportunity to write. Dylan's actually a follower. He's actually Christian. And I sat down with him and was like, dude, are you okay before I do these lyrics? And he was like, yeah, let's listen to the tune. Let's look at the lyrics. And so I made sure, and Chris says too, they're both followers of God, just like you, Larry. And the goal of the song was not to attack religion. That's not what it's about, because religion plays a very important role in society. As an atheist, I am not one of those people that's like, I'm better than you, I'm smarter than you, this, that, or whatever. I wanted to tell the story from my point of view without attacking religion personally on that level. The song is actually about, listen, you have religious people who take a political platform and they use religion to instill their politics and be very wary and careful of that. And there was someone in our community who's still there today in Mount Juliet. I won't name the name now, but, you know, I've posted about it. I'm tagging him and all that stuff. But he's one of these people, they're dangerous because they can actually get people hurt. And that was what the song is about. It's like, be weary, because we've dealt with Hitler. Read a history book. We've dealt with that before. And that's kind of where the inspiration came from, because I was seeing this guy spout off, talking about people in his congregation, that they're witches and that. And I'm like, dude, you're playing with a loaded gun. You can actually get somebody killed doing this. You don't know everybody's mental stability. So you got to be really careful about what you say, and you have to be really careful about how you say it. And he's pointing these people out and was like, you know what? That's my inspiration to talk about. If you're going to be a religious leader and you want to inspire people in the community, preach love, not hate. Don't pull anybody out that you're burning books and witches and all that stuff. Like you're doing some kind of Harry Potter bullshit. Like preach what Jesus actually preached, which was love.
Love.
I mean, I know enough. That's what he preached. Regardless of what your sins were, Jesus preached love. And the message this guy was sending was like instilling fear and hate in his congregation. And I'm like, so my message is, look, dude, set and listen to who you're listening to and consume that and really put it in your brain and be weary. Because not all who stand in front of you who are preaching this message are what they say they are. That's what the song's really about. Be weary of the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Well, go ahead. You introduce. Matt, that was very well said. It's a deep video.
Thank you.
What did you point at?
Dylan was going to say.
Oh, something. Go ahead. Let's hear from Dylan.
So I was confirming what Matt was saying. It's definitely about, you know, wolves in sheep's clothing. Just be weary about who you're listening to and what their message is, because underlying messages come through all the time. I mean, I was saying earlier, whether it be here, there, or anywhere, we can have underlying messages that can cause some serious harm.
True story.
True story. And I'll tell you a true story. Any of you guys, well, I know Matt, you've seen my Metallica jacket, correct? And that was a beautiful 50-year, it was my 50th birthday present from my wife and one of my good friends.
His wife, who's sitting right here. Why do you talk about me in the third person? I am right here.
Go ahead, get saucy. Between this beautiful better half across the table.
You like it.
But I was brought up in the church, and actually my cousin, who married Mary and I, is a little further right than I am, and he criticized my jacket. He's like, man, you know, how could you say, you know, you're part of Sanctuary Church and you're this and that and they're Christian? And I'm like, you know what, man? I said, I'm a sheep in wolf's clothing. Are you going in there reaching out to the metal community? You think they're going to listen to you when you know, the first time you see my son in probably a dozen years, you say, hey, what do you think of Jesus? Literally, it was in the first 30 minutes of our visit. I hadn't seen him in years. And I'm like, do you think people are going to respond to that or me that just come at him with love? I just want to catch him and let God clean him. He zipped his mouth because that's what I like being as a sheep in wolf's clothing. Not judging, not caring what you believe, just and you know, just to kind of go along with what you said. The intro and a great song here, but I like that's to call myself the opposite, because religion has messed up what God and Jesus were supposed to be quite a bit. Fully agree with that, but it was a great setup for the song. Anything, Mary? You want to do the official intro?
No, you said it all. I think Dylan should do the official intro. Right. He hasn't said much.
Yeah, Dylan Stern.
Ding. Dylan.
Wait, am I just announcing the song?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ruined it.
Introducing.
Way to go, Dylan. Santa's not coming this year.
Let's play some Mountain Tomb. We got the band in the Electric Fishbowl along with my wife, with Mary Fish. You're supposed to say something. You're supposed to, come on, get snappy, Wendy.
Get snappy. I was being snappy. Introduce the song. Push play.
Music City Metal. Here's God Has a Gun.
Before you hit play, can we give Dylan one more chance? I want to hear Dylan. But
all right, yeah. We'll mark.
God Has a Gun.
Yeah, do it.
Here in the electric
do it, metal.
Here's God Has a Gun by Mountain Tomb.
Confidence.
Music City Metal, you can watch the video, not just on YouTube and all our socials, which we're going to make sure that we have linked up at our Instagram socials. That's your job, Mary.
That's my job, because everybody thinks when there's a post, read the words, it came from a girl.
Definitely not me.
No.
Unless I'm watching something.
I just want to mention real quick that as of today, we're also on Tidal. So our videos have been shot in 4K, and our music's been recorded in high def, and it's on Tidal, so you can really get the good stuff on Tidal. So,
yeah, I saw that. I was thinking of checking that out. I'm an Apple guy, so I do use iTunes. Mary's a Spotify. We're both on YouTube.
I mean, the only thing that sucks is you have to have a membership to actually watch it, but it's worth it.
Right. Does it help the bands and the artists as well anyway by watches or –
Yeah, they actually have a program on there called Tidal. I forget what it was. I signed us up for it, and you submit all your music stuff and your videos and stuff, and they review it just kind of like with Spotify as far as the marquee stuff.
Nice.
Matt, I got to tease you for a minute. Are you saying Tidal? Because it sounds like Tidal.
Tidal, yeah.
Tidal. He sent me the link. I was looking at it earlier.
Tidal.
Tidal. Southern.
Is that my East Tennessee coming out? I'm sorry.
You're fine.
Oh, all the Tennesseans will get it. We're just the Northerners talk through our nose. We'll ask once or twice to be sure. But one thing, look, we just the other day we were reading we go through the Nashville scene every week, and there was a pretty good article in there on how the industry has changed. And they were, you know, back in the day, they were specifically talking about the 80s, and metal band got signed. They got about 15% of hard CD sales at about 15, 16 bucks a piece. You sold a couple million of them, you did good. And now the payout on Spotify was what? It was for a million listens, a band got about $31.50. 7,000. I got a lot more from Apple. It was about 7,000 for a million, and less on YouTube, 2,200. So, you know, I can't tell you how many times I went and bought a CD for one song to hear one song. Right. So it's tougher for bands coming about now, but you guys are kind of ahead of the game and seeing how it's changing and doing the single release. It's a smarter way to do it, I think. Obviously, I know several other bands in the area doing it because it's more economical, especially if you have families, day jobs, all that. So that's one thing, you're ahead of the game. What else are you taking advantage of? I mean, obviously, y'all know 20 years ago, even the industry was different. There were still some CDs being sold. Now it's like pay your own way, make an album, sell your T-shirts, hopefully get some money until you're good enough to open up for someone, you know?
Man, right now we're now a full circle and we're just rehearsing and hopefully get out there and play some shows. But the way for releasing a single, what I said in the last interview was, what's advantageous about that is that you have a single song to promote, one song. You don't have an entire album. So with an entire album, you got 12 or 13 songs to promote, right? Well, with that album, you don't know what song's going to hit. You don't know what people are gravitating to. Well, we've written one song, and we've written one song for the masses that we really want to hear. So that's the one thing the four of us, plus a producer, five of us, can concentrate on. So that's the big advantage about it. Also, with that being said, people's attention spans aren't into 12, 13 songs albums anymore. They're just not. Unless they're collecting vinyl albums. Now, the metal world's different, where people want to collect albums and they want the artwork and they want 12, 13 songs, whatever. But for Mountain Tune, we're getting into that genre bending where we are metal, but we're experimenting with a lot of different stuff. And for us right now, doing one song at a time and figuring out what's going to click, because we are a business, we do want to sell, and I don't care if anybody's like, oh, you guys are sellouts, you're not being true to yourself. It's like, no, we are being true to ourselves. We want to figure out that madness that makes people tick. You know, what is that thing? Because that's actually a beautiful thing. If you can tap into that and figure it out, you know, you play music for the rest of your life and not have to worry about it.
Right.
So that's the beautiful thing about doing singles, is that you get to work on one solid song and you get to analyze every little beat, every little hi-hat, this, that, or whatever. And when you release it, you get to see what people say and this, that, or whatever. So you take all that information and go, okay, the next one that we're working on, this feels good, this feels good, this, that, or whatever. So it's a continuously growing and learning process. And like I said, we got Jason in the band, we got Lee in the band now. So it's four of us plus our producer. So now we have these five brains going with all this knowledge going, how do we be heavy and appeal to a broad mass? Because we don't want to be death metal. Like I am the biggest death metal head in the band, but I also like a lot of beautiful stuff. I also like pop music. So how do we take what Lee wants and Dylan wants and Jason wants and our producer, who's, like I said, you know, Timberlake, Prince, and Pantera? How do we take all that and make a big, beautiful ball of wax? How do you keep working? You know, and that's a really big challenge, because you start passing around and everybody wants their own taste in it. Again, we're all humble and we don't knock anybody down. And that's what's really cool about what's with Mountain Tune, is like, how do you do that? Well, it takes time. It takes time. So, you know, we'll release Ghost and it'll be another, you know, 5 or 6 months. And in between that, we'll be rehearsing and figuring out how we're going to do shows and stuff. So that's how it works for us.
So tell us about your next single then, Ghost in the Machine, because that, was that the Police? I'm not saying you took the name from anywhere, but I'm testing my own memory. What was that? Was it the Police?
Album by the Police, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
It was a great album, yeah. I had do on it.
Wait, Dylan's square went green. What did he say? But...
yeah, Sting and the Police. Yeah.
I love that album.
Well, and the only reason sometimes I don't know is because, you know, we were talking about the whole church thing. And I like to say I grew up under a rock, because I grew up Assemblies of God. So I didn't watch movies. I didn't learn about, like, you know, I didn't know Pretty in Pink, like all those things, like from our generation, until I was in college. So I was like a decade behind everybody else. So when I actually recognize and go, oh my god, that was something, like in the back of my head I'm like, yes, I'm finally catching up to the people in my generation, because I mean, I can't fault my parents for it. You know what I mean? Like, that was the thing in back in the 80s, you know, the Jimmy Swaggerts and the whoever, they were, you know, they had, what's the word? Charisma, you know, they really drew the people in. Yeah. So I can't blame my parents for that, but I'm finally getting caught up. So with that, tell us about Ghost in the Machine.
You know, I have talked about it, and I want to give the floor to Dylan. Dylan actually wrote the riff, and I want to hear his side of the story, because I've talked about it several times, and I just want Dylan to have the floor right now. So go ahead, Dylan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Ghost in the Machine came about just kind of as we were in the middle of working on God Has a Gun. So as we're in the studio, you know, going through like writing riffs or writing lyrics or what have you, I'll be in the back just kind of doodling, you know, just kind of playing around, just dicking around with what kind of sounds good and whatnot. And then I was just playing some kind of like little kind of thing. And then as soon as I finished playing that riff, Matt and Chris's necks snapped, their heads snapped towards me. I thought their necks snapped. And they were like, what was that? And I was like, I don't know. And I play it again, and they're just like, holy crap, we got to keep that. And as we were continuing kind of going through God Has a Gun, we kind of laid some demos down for Ghost of the Machine, and it just kind of eventually was like, okay, this is the next project we're working on after God Has a Gun. And we just kind of exploded on that project from there. And it was such a cool, I love this. This is one of the reasons why I love doing music, is because whenever you find those like lightning in the bottle songs, like just and everybody hears everything and it all just kind of comes together like all at once. Like, I think the whole song was probably written, you know, the main part was written in the studio that night. And then a day later that next week, Matt and I got together to work on it, and the whole thing just came together. Lyrics, like everything. Well. No, lyrics came later, but music and everything kind of came.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the way we lay music down, or the way we write a song, is we typically write music to get the fundamentals, and then we start working with lyrics to see how things are going to flow. And if we need to change things, we will. Mm-hmm. And I got a great story about one reason that I know Dylan is a good dude, is because so Chris and I, he was on vacation or something, and we were trying to figure out how we're going to end this song, right? So Chris paid me a compliment a couple weeks ago. He's like, dude, you're going to transition. We need these transitions, whatever. And I didn't realize this, but in Ghost of the Machine, that's what I was working on, was like these transitions or whatever. And we were trying to figure out how we end the song, you know? And I had come up with this dirty, nasty death metal riff that just did not fix the song whatsoever. But me and Chris were like, that's got some to, you know? And I looked at Chris, is like, Dylan's going to hate that. And he's like, yeah, he is. And I'm like, but let's send it to him anyway, you know? So he's on vacation or whatever. So we recorded, we sent it to him. And Dylan's like, he's the sweetest guy in the world. He came in, he's like, that's a really cool riff, but it's not really fitting the song. And Chris and I just sat in the studio and laughed and was like, see, that's the kind of dude that we're working with. You know what I mean? It's like, he's trying to be polite, but he's like, you know, he didn't completely come out. It's like, that fucking sucks. I can't deal with that.
I'm starting to get a little bit more abrasive with doo-doo.
That was doo-doo.
That's all you got to say. You just look straight at the individual and just doo-doo. And then we'll just shut it off. It's done. No more.
And he actually did tell Jason that the other day. It was like, doo-doo.
Doo-doo.
So that comes out on June 30th. Do we have any teasers we can share with the world, or no? Not yet.
We have plenty. I just got to get them out there. Oh, I'm sorry. There's
promos. Oh, no, you're good. There's some social promos on our Instagram and Facebook, and you can kind of get some feel for, like, what the tune is.
Nice. So tell us what your socials are, Dylan, since you have the mic.
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. Yeah, those are the main ones. And, of course, our website, mountaintomb.com. That's where you can see all the artwork, and you can go read our bio, contact us and then see release dates, tour dates, music, whatnot?
Well, we haven't said a lot publicly about Fish Fest 4, but it is coming up. And I can say this about Mountain Tomb is that they are on the very short list. We have gotten, we're swamped. We're so excited about the people that want to play our festival, man. I mean, they're coming in pretty good. And we don't want a complete redo of our other bands. There are some bands that we consider OG bands, but we'll be announcing soon exactly how we're going to make our final decision. Some of the, what am I allowed to say here? I guess the bottom line is
it's our decision. Wait, you can't ask a question and then answer it yourself.
we'll just go back and chop it out.
No, but what you are allowed to say, because I've been talking to Rob tonight, right, which is why I've been on my phone.
Yeah.
That we're going to do a show with him probably next week. We'll do a podcast with Rob. Sweet. And like just play blind songs, like not tell him who it is. Just say, okay, clip number one, boom, song from X band. And obviously I'll have a list because of course I'll have a spreadsheet, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, get his reaction. I was talking to Jack, but I think Jack's still out of the country because his conversations are like bits and pieces. And then hours later he answers. So he might be busy, but Rob is down for it. And then that way it's not us picking our favorites, because like you said, you don't want to go to a festival year over year and see the same lineup. Now, granted, there are anchor bands, you know, for us, there's anchor bands for, you know, other festivals.
Right.
That just makes sense because a lot of times that's who you go to that festival to see once a year. But for us, it's more about showcasing, like we've been doing, the new, the up and coming, the unknowns, like with what happened with Dystopian. When I told Rob, he's like, well, who's playing? And I'm like, Dystopian and, you know, one other band that it's our OG band. And he's like, oh, Dystopian? You know, he wants to jam with them again. He's been productive in like kind of helping them get their feet solid. Their kids, we kind of took a shining to them. Okay, are we playing favorites? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know, but I don't care. That was my decision. So that's what we're doing. So, and Rob was in agreement with it. But, you know, to get like, you know, bands like Mountain Tomb, okay, you guys don't have a full album, but that's okay. Can we play a song or two? Can we highlight something? Can we put your merch out? And the whole point is to get the unknowns known, because there's so much talent in this town that trying to get booked into somewhere, I notice it seems to be the same. I don't want to say it's clicky because we've had this conversation before,
yeah,
but Nashville can be a little clicky. So if we can help somebody kick that door open, I'm all about kick it. I will kick the door hard for the underdog. And that's just me. And I'm not saying you guys are underdogs, but, you know, for a band.
Or if I'm being underdogs. Actually,
either that or just new and like
new,
talented.
Right.
And, you know,
yeah, we are
you
new,
guys
man.
Are coming off as
that's
new,
the fun
talented
thing about
professional.
It,
cool,
and humble.
And humble, yes. Very important.
Yeah, I mean,
so
we don't expect, you know, the world tomorrow. So,
well, the way this is going to go.
I'll tell you this. We had this conversation before we got on this call. Larry and Mary, love you guys to death. And thank you for letting me shoot the video out there. Whether Mountain Tomb gets to play for Fish Fest or not, you have my dedication. And I'm sure one or two of these guys will come out and help as well. Will we get to play or not? That's not what it's about. I'm not doing this because I want to get a slot. I'm doing this because I love it. I just love being part of the culture. That's who I am. And, you know, if we're going to make adjustments and we can't debut that evening, we're going to be fine. We'll be fine.
Well,
because the one thing it's done is that it's making me, Jason, and Lee already figure out and Dylan our schedules to actually, you know, play one or two songs. How do we actually make this work? That is a big question, because Jason is not. How do we do this? And we want to do this. It's not that we're going to quit, don't want to do it, but it really pushes that question forward. How do we do it? So you guys are cool. Whether we get to play or not, we're there. We're good. So,
well,
we're
either
the last,
way,
we're the last fucking thing you should worry about.
Either way, I mean, at the end of Fish Fest 3, I think you and I stood in the middle of the arena. Everyone's packing up, and I'm But you and I were in such a great conversation, I didn't want it to end. And, you know, you expressed interest with helping. Yeah, I know. Look at Mary
shaking her head. I'm sitting there winding up cables as usual. You're sitting there, yap.
Well, I have kind of earned that, not have to wind cables anymore. I'm sorry. I've been doing this since 1990. So I have kind of, I mean, I'll do it when I have to, but it's, you know, with our budget. With the, but anyway, but I either way, I wanted you, I knew right away that night you were going to be a part of Fish Fest on the backside or the front side or both. So, absolutely. You guys, the bottom line is we are making a few decisions and then the rest is going to be kind of like a contest with Rob, a slight battle of the bands. I do have two other judges that are willing to kick in and we might do it as one, but we're going to go through the list, decide, and then who's left. Those last few slots is going to be decided by, not by popularity, but by musicianship, lyrics, and votes by a few good musicians that I trust. So that's the way it's going to go. Go to fishproductions.rocks. We're still taking an application. The next episode with Rob will definitely have a lot more details. There's cool stuff. We're working on like a bowling package and food package before the festival. It's at Eastside Bowl. Guess we didn't even get that far.
We didn't because this podcast wasn't really about us. But yeah, when I told Rob about the packages the bowling, with bowling, he was like, bowling? He didn't make that sound. I'm making that sound of what he might have said in his head. But he's like, how about darts?
About darts.
So we'll see.
Either way, some good things are coming together. And we are about several weeks behind. What happened, a little slap in the face with my health. We don't need to get into it. I'm doing all right. But it was big enough that it slowed us up for a minute. But we're getting there, man. And let's go back to talking about you guys and the Mountain Tomb and your songs. You had mentioned, you come at it from a love perspective. But what about the something geared towards specifically on mental health issues? Anything you want to talk about there? Because that's something we're passionate about. This isn't a fundraiser for Fish Fest is a fundraiser for AFSP. Both Mary and I have been, not only did we discover a very close friend of ours, but she lost a family member and I lost a family member all in the same year. So it was pretty major. And we know that some of the studies that have come out, especially since post-COVID, man, the numbers are horrible. 50 to 60% of people have some kind of anxiety going on, whether it's fear of health or struggling financially, whatever. So let's talk about that for a minute, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, man. Ghost of the Machine, it came about. So like Dylan said, we were sitting in the studio and he played this little riff and Chris and I were like, what was that? So we recorded it and we sat on it for a minute and then we came back to it. And then, I started going through some things myself mentally shortly after COVID and just kept writing and kept moving with it. And as I was going through my stuff, I realized I was going to therapy, I was doing some other things, and I was also taking medication. And I realized how important music was in my life to be able to get this message out. I am no longer embarrassed to tell people I've had mental issues because of anxiety. We all go through it, and there's such a fucking taboo about, like, when you go through hard times in your life and you're not just not thinking right, people want to label, and they were like, you'll get through, you're just fine, instead of whatever. No, that's not the way it is. Your brain does something. You don't think clearly, and I have a very good example of that. I had made some changes, and Dylan was out in the parking lot. He met me halfway one night, and I was like, dude, are you about to fucking quit the band? And he literally hugged me. He's like, what are you talking about? And that's how far my brain was out in the middle of nowhere. So for me, with this Ghost in the Machine is literally recognizing that anxiety, overwhelming anxiety, can take you to places that you never even dreamed of. And so mental health is very important. It's important to talk to people. It's important to talk to family and friends and be like, I don't understand it. I don't know what the fuck's going on with me. I can't explain it. You want a definition of what's going on? I can't give it to you. All I know is that I have this seething feeling that nothing's comfortable. No matter what I do, no matter what I say, if I exercise healthy, this, that, or whatever, everything just feels abnormal. It doesn't feel good. And that's what Ghost in the Machine is about. It's, I am not comfortable with who I am, and I can't explain it. You're going to have to give me some time to figure this shit out. And it does, with mental illness, it takes some time. Like, and you really have to bury into yourself and go, okay, this is reality, this is not. So there's a lot of hard work between those avenues of, like, figuring out what's real and what's not. And there's things you have to do that are going to be hard in your life. You have to, okay, I can do this, I can do that, I can't, but I can't do this. If I want to get mentally healthy, you have to cut those cancers out of your life. You have to. And once you do, the light starts to shine very slow. It's painful. It hurts at first. But after a while, it starts to kind of shine a little bit. So that's what Ghost in the Machine is about. It's literally just overwhelming anxiety where you just can't function. And it's not you want to take your life. It's just you just can't function. It's you just can't deal. Like, you just, yeah. I mean, even paying for gas at the pump, you know, you forget your freaking number. To even, you're like, which credit card am I even using? Or which debit? It just, everything just gets so convoluted that you forget who you are. You become a ghost. Like, you just get, because one thought leads to this, and this next thought leads to that. And next thing you know, by the end of the day, before you even try to go to bed. And when you try to go to bed, sometimes you're sitting there going, am I going to wake up tomorrow? What the fuck? What's going to happen tomorrow? Do I want to go to sleep? Because if I wake up tomorrow and it's like this, do I want to face that? That's what overwhelming anxiety is. And again, I can't stress enough, like Dylan met me in the middle of the street and I was wide eyed and it was just, dude, are you quitting the band? Like, what's going on? And he was like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? So anxiety is like, it's a huge impact in your life. And
what's crazy, listening to Matt even just talk about it. I mean, when you think about what we're really doing, I mean, as far as the music industry itself, I mean, look at all the cool stuff that music does. You know, I mean, it increases, you know, I mean, blood flow to the brain, you know, to that section that kind of generates emotions. I mean, it can make you dance, it can make you sing, it can make you move, wiggle, jiggle, tap your feet, you know, it can reduce your stress and elevate your mood and everything. But what's nuts is when you really step back and you think about it, that like that last report that I could find, because I was digging around online today, you know, just to try to have something new and I guess what's something that would sound kind of important and smart. Listen to how smart Jason is. You know, but, you know, you'd look at it, but dude, I found something. It was a Record Union report that came out in late 2022, like in December, and they said that 73% of independent musicians have battled some type of stress, anxiety, and depression. And what's crazy is when you step back and you really look at it, it was like the people who are creating what reduces stress for everybody else are probably some of the most stressed out motherfuckers on the planet. You know, I mean, so it's like we're helping to alleviate so many other people's. But what you got to question is like, dude, why are we so stressed out? By what we're doing, are we taking their burdens away and putting them in our bag and throwing it over our shoulders and walking on down the road? Wow, you know, so I mean, it's just kind of crazy when you look at how that really works in life. And it's nuts. It's nuts.
I have heard a lot
about what you're saying, Jay.
A lot of musicians have said that some of the best music comes out of depressed musicians. Some people I really admire and cherish. Yeah. Bob. Yeah. And I definitely believe that's true. I am one of those that feel music. Now, I'm not a musician. I was a pretty good DJ and MC. Wasn't too bad. That's how I got her hooked, by the way. We met at a wedding. Come on, that was kind of funny. Hooked, Fish.
It was, I know.
We met at a wedding. I was DJing. Yeah, it's a cute story. We've told it before. I'll tell you some other time. Yeah. But anyway. Everyone goes, aw. So, but, you know, people feel music, you know, I always have, so I listen, if I'm angry, I listen, there's a certain genre I'll listen to and it kind of sucks it out of you. There's certain, you know, softer stuff I listen to when I'm sad, whatever, but it helps me, sort out those feelings. I've dealt with anxiety and depression. I went through that, some dark years with it. So I can feel you on that too. So that was an interesting comment you said, Jason, about, you know, transferring over the stress from the listener to you, the burden shifts. That was pretty good stuff there. It's just kind of maybe where we go for that. Now, the, you know, the other thing is they've done studies on metal, and this is cool about feeling music. You know, this dude was hanging a microphone underwater and playing Slayer, and it was drawing in some of the biggest great white sharks ever. You ever see that? That the guy wants to draw in sharks. He's playing. He was playing Slayer death metal, and playing that underwater drew in all kinds of sharks. And then they did a test with metal. It's badass, right?
I'd like to see that for sure.
Yeah, yeah. You can find it. It was on Shark Week a couple of years ago. Yeah, man, we just play Slayer. Slayer is a particular good one for bringing in the big boys. And then they did the test. The
sharks just completely chilled out. They're like, yeah, right. I feel better now.
Yeah. The truth.
And somebody who was slamming metal said they did a study on playing metal in front of your plants, and they got sick, and the leaves turned yellow, but they played classical music, and they flourished. But I'd rather have, you know, the shark thing's way fucking cooler, isn't it?
Yeah.
But again, man.
There's conflicting studies out there about metal and mental health, but there is one subject where it talks about, you know, the music is angry. It talks about emotion. And those of us that listen to metal or write metal or whatever, that we're a lot more settled in who we are and we're happy with who we are versus the rest of the world, because as a metalhead, you figure out you've got one life to live. It's very short, and you just don't give a shit. You know, at some point, you do the best you can. You're not trying to impress anybody. You are who you are, and that's what I've always loved about metal, is that you are who you are. Mm-hmm. And it's, with the metal family, there's so many – the culture's so diverse. It's huge. And nobody's worried about Louis Vuitton or what Beyonce is doing. No, it's like that dude has an AC/DC shirt and he's eating ice cream cone, but he's got a chain wallet. Let's go talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you see someone with a metal shirt on in like Walmart, you can approach it first and be like, what was the last concert you went to?
Exactly.
And you can have a conversation, get the frozen nuggets out of Walmart. You know, and that's the great thing about Walmart. Or I mean, not Walmart, but metal.
Instant family, head, man.
When you see somebody,
full of Walmart.
It's a family everywhere you go. It's
family,
and it's still crazy. Like, I've been in the metal scene since I was in fucking middle school, and here I'm 46 years old, and it's still underground. It's still frowned upon, and it's like, if you guys would just give metal a chance and understand that this is probably the biggest proponent of love you've ever met in your life. Yeah, we wear black, and you see pentagrams, and you see this and that, or whatever. But it's totally opposite. We do that because we don't. Yeah. We weed out you fucking fake fuckers. And that's what metal is. It weeds out the fake.
I love winning people over with that too. I love it.
Yeah. It's called waiting. Man, just being metal. Right. Metal is like, no. It's caller ID. Metal is caller ID. You know, you can choose calling on the phone, and you can decide whether you're gonna.
It's fucking spam.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah, I do that as a.
Matt and I. Sorry.
No, go. You're fine.
That's actually how Matt and I met, was because he was wearing a hat.
Yeah, really, really, that's awesome.
I was at work and Matt came in to sell his car. I work at a car dealer, and he was wearing a Slayer hat, and you know, I put car info in, handed off to my manager. They have his check and everything ready in like 10 minutes, but he and I sat there for another hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just talk.
Brother Matt's easy
talking
to talk
music,
to.
Just talking metal.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love stories like that.
Yeah, I should have been home like an hour and a half earlier, but I was sitting with Dylan and we just talked about music and that we were about to release Burn. And I was like, dude, if you're interested, you know, and he's like, well, I moved in from Missouri and, you know, we kept doing that, whatever. And then, it came out, was in the video with us for Burn, and then I actually offered him a job. He's like, man, I got so many projects going on, I'll let you know. So Chris and I were like, that's cool, man. You know, like 3 weeks later, he's like, dude, I'm fucking in. I was like,
that's what's up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, because ever since, like, when we were working on God Has a Gun, he came in there a couple times, and dude, I mean, seriously, as a guitar player, as a human being, I can't compliment him enough. He just has this ear, him and Chris. So it's funny. It's like, I have a technical ear, but I can't play it. But he does. He has a technical, he can play it. And then Chris has this ear. It's just like, I don't know what planet that shit's on sometimes. But the three, so it's kind of like, I'll come in and go, this is what I want. And Chris goes, oh, you're trying to do this? And Dylan goes, what about this? And we go, fuck. That's how it works. It's just how it works with us, you know? Like, Dylan just gets that last little piece and goes, this is what you want. And Chris and I are like, whatever. Just move on, you know? And the great thing about working with Jason vocally and bass player-wise, it's just one of those moments in life where we get to work together again. And like I said, we can trade back and forth. And this whole thing about mental health issue, back in the day, we did a song together with a Jefferson Airplane called White Rabbit. It's one of those mental health songs, you know, just kind of crazy. And I can't wait to work and do stuff more like that. Because even back in those days in Shape Cell, he and I were working to talk about, you know, real social issues, things that people, and that's the thing I love about heavy metal. You can actually talk about things that people are kind of afraid to touch.
That's it.
But in heavy metal, it's not taboo. You know, this is real life. We're allowed to talk about it. We encourage it, you know.
And that's, we don't try to be that we're not. We lay all the cards out on the table, and you show everybody exactly what you're dealing with. We're not afraid to say, hey, I have a flaw.
Right.
You know, here's my flaw. This is my problem. You know, and I mean, we just work around it.
And, you know, metalheads know that. That's part of the reason why we feel comfortable coming up, because everyone – I mean, it's really rough to use the word everyone, but most in that this place of metal knows that it's, and there, so that fear of, is this person would talk to me or whatever, is just like part of the family thing, because it's just like an unsung rule.
Yeah, but the family needs to expand to other side of the fence, because girls are grossly underrepresented.
Oh. Well, it's
which is
better.
Why. I wear like actual concert shirts on purpose for that reason, because if there's another girl at Walmart, which I don't really go to Walmart, but at Target, which there probably won't be another girl wearing a metal shirt in Target in Mount Juliet, it'll be a poser shirt that she bought at Kohl's. But I try to do that on purpose to make, you know, to have those conversations, and because there's not a lot of, okay, let me back up. Because Miranda, if Miranda ever listens to this, will punch me in the face for saying it. But there's not a lot of like girls that really are out there doing music, doing metal, giving it their all and putting themselves out there as females, you know, just whatever. The line in the bathroom shorter. I'm not going to complain about it at shows. But still, I do it on purpose and wear show shirts, because if there's somebody out there that wants to talk, that we can reach out, because that's the whole purpose of what we do. I don't sit here to hear myself talk. Why are you laughing at me?
Nothing. I'm smiling.
Oh,
I love how when you're trying to get the girls out. I love it.
Well, yes, because what about all these single men? Well, I don't know who's single on the phone. Some of you have kids, but whatever. Dylan's a young kid.
No, we're all married.
Everybody, you got kids too? Boy, you are too.
Well, Dylan has kids. No, kids don't have kids. He's got two dogs, so he might as well be kids.
Okay, fine. But you know what I'm saying?
Especially Nala.
The whole point is to reach out to people who, I don't know, just that fringe group of people, because Nashville is so clicky and whatever, that if I have a chance to at least have a conversation with somebody and say, hey, I'm going to a show on Friday, you want to go? You know, when you just have like show friends?
Right.
I miss that. I miss that about here. That was different up north. Than it is here. I don't have show friends, and maybe it's because we live out in the middle of freaking nowhere. But
well, still, we get out enough.
We do. Yeah. I know, but I'm.
Yeah, but you're in the South. You're in the South doing heavy metal. So South, and I mean, heavy metal in the South is I don't want to say it's rare, but it's not commonplace. You know, like it is up north. You know, you got Louisiana with you know, Philip Anselmo, Pantera, Crowbar, those guys. I Hate God and all that stuff. But as far as like Tennessee metal goes, as far as heavy as we are, it's just not really there. And it's a very, very small group. And that's the message of Fishmans, is to get it out there. And so,
exactly.
We're musicians. family. We love each other. Come out, enjoy, have a good time with us. We're just people, you know, and we love heavy metal. We're not out to sacrifice goats and shit. We're just out here.
I had two goats. We could have done that. The, with, so.
You know, I've had a couple of artists say that Nashville is considered a B-list city. You're going to draw out enough to fill a B-list venue, which is, you know, 3 to 7,000. And that's how it is. So like, one of the particular bands we wanted to play, he's like, man, we're still on our A-list tour. Maybe next time we're going to do B and C list, next year. And, you know, we'd seriously consider playing Fish Fest, but right now we're pushing a new album and we're only doing A-list venues. And that was that, you know, right. And it's not the first time we've heard that. And, you know, I was kind of Iron Maiden. That was a good turnout. What was another one? Godsmack was pretty good, but still there was under 10,000 there. We've been to some killer
Even
shows.
Even though Judas Priest, after 50 years, only played the odd or 5,000, whatever. Yeah. What is that Municipal. Thing called? Municipal. Whatever.
I mean, it was good, but they shortened it. You could tell they moved the stage forward and crammed because they were saying, oh, you can go sit over here. You know, it was different, but that's the way the town is. But I like the ones who were in it. And really thankful that Matt, you and I got to meet, and look forward to getting to know all of you guys. We got to do a gathering, just a fun gathering afternoon of hanging out at the fish farm here sooner than later. And tell us what, as we wrap up here, what's in the very short future? Anything for sure on the books besides the single coming out? Like what's going on?
What we're working on right now, we are in the studio. We're working on Graveyard, which is a song about me and just learning to be alone and being comfortable with that and being comfortable with who I am and realizing that, you know, being alone and being comfortable with who you are and loving yourself is a very hard issue for people to understand. It took me a minute to understand what that is, to love yourself enough to be comfortable with who you are. And that what that means is that you wake up every day, brush your teeth, put on your clothes, and when you walk out that door, you're confident about what you do, confident about who you are. You're not going to please everybody. You're not going to make everybody happy. And that includes friends, very close friends, and family. And you have to be okay with that. And that's really a hard thing to do. It's a lot harder than what people think, you know, because you don't want to be excluded from anything. But as long as you're being true to yourself and you're finding your own happiness, it's okay. But it's really hard to execute. It's a really hard thing to execute. So the song is called Graveyard, which is about burying your past and being okay with where you're going in the future. So right now, as far as Mount Tim goes, we're in the studio. I'm writing lyrics for Jason. Dylan's pretty much already laid down the song as far as riff goes, and we're working with Chris making some cool little 808 bass drops because he's from Memphis, you know.
Nice. Stuff like that. Oh, I love that.
And then we got,
I was a DJ too.
We are not afraid to experiment. Like, we are not. One of my biggest influences as far as not afraid to be experiment is Mastodon. Mastodon's not there. They don't care. They just do it, you know. It sounds good. It feels good. They do it, you know. And that's what Mountain Kings approaches. Feels good. It sounds good. We're going to do it. And then, you know, Lee's going to be working with Dylan or with Chris in the studio doing some drum stuff. So, like I said, it's all coming full circle and we're in the studio. And yeah, man, we're just going to keep pushing forward and keep promoting ourselves. And we'll see where it goes, man. We're in no rush, though. We're not in a rush.
Well, it's very impressive.
What's that?
It's very impressive. Y'all are family first, you know, Matt, a couple times. Hey, man, I'm with my daughter. I'm in the pool or I'm doing this. And that's awesome that you keep it that way. Everything else will fall into place, man. As we raise kids too, it's important, you know, that's the top of the pyramid. It's beautiful. I think it's awesome that you're all that way. It's great. It's much needed, you know. And, man, we're going to put all of your links into the liner notes. And you want to wrap up with a song? You want to play Demon or do you have another one we can play it, you know, to wrap up the podcast.
Actually, man, just keep plugging God Has a Gun, man.
You know, all right.
To me, it's a very message to just people wake up and realize who you're listening to, and, you know, don't get swindled, man. Just, you know, start thinking for yourself and really put yourself first, and don't think that someone who's out there telling you they are your leader and they've got your best interest in mind, don't believe it. Just, you know, think for yourself. So play God Has a Gun. That's what it's really about.
Yeah, that's good.
Amen.
Yes.
Fight the power. I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I'm not making fun of you, but I just felt like that. What was happening right there?
It is, man. Like, I mean, seriously, like, I can't implore people enough to educate themselves and really study and, you know, think for yourselves and don't let anybody else try to influence you how you should live. Like, I don't care what political leader is, especially Trump. Fuck him. I'll say that on camera, or even Biden. Fuck him. I don't care. Just think for yourself and do the best you can for yourself and educate yourself and decide the best way you can. And don't let, you know, just don't ride somebody's coattails because they say something. Really investigate, really study. And, you know, God Has a Gun. That's what it's about.
That's it.
Oh, I was just going to say I agree, because groupthink can become contagious.
Oh, absolutely. Very. Absolutely. Hence how we wrap up the show. But, gentlemen, thank you. It was nice to get to know you. Again, I look forward to just hanging when it's not a gig, just to hang out, get to know y'all, and more, Matt.
And we'll get to talk to Lee a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is the clown. He's the drummer. He's like, I just do high time.
He's just loud with sticks.
Yeah. The strong, silent type.
Yeah.
Well, at this time, we are still taking applications at Fixed.
Try that again, Mark.
We still have the application form is still up at fishproductions.rocks for Fish Fest, but the stack is getting pretty thick. We may have to close it down sooner and later before there's just, I don't know. But anyways, go to Fish Production.
You haven't said it in so long.
I know. Go ahead.
Fishproductions.rocks.
Fish Fest or
market, yeah. All right.
I'll do it.
Fishproductions.ff4/.
Go get tickets. Come out and see us.
Tickets will be live the
Mountain day. Mountain Dew debut. Woo! Well, we'll see. That he's not 100%, but you know what? Come out, see the show. Just come support metal. Come support mental health, and just come out and have a jam and hang out with us, have some drinks, and everybody have a good time.
Next episode. Good announcements with that. But yeah, what Matt said, go check it out and check out Mountain Tomb. All the links are in the liner notes, whether you're on Spotify or on Apple Music. Got your hot link right up.
Like it, share it.
Listen, you can pre-save the Ghost in the Machine single, which comes out, less than 2 weeks from the time this podcast will drop. So good luck to you guys, man. Again, thanks for spending time. Even it's the virtual Electric Fish Bowl. Got to get you over here, and we'll do some real chilling. But thank you all, gentlemen. Wish you the best. And as we always say, hey, do you want to make the world a better place? Commit a random act of kindness to a complete stranger. Peace.